This is the Rebel Room, LasVegasSun.com. What are you doing on Friday? Huh? What are you doing on Saturday? You could be going to a Rebel weekend, if you will. The basketball team has their lone exhibition game as they prepare for the 19-20 tip. And football at home against San Diego State. I'm Ray Brewer alongside Mike Grimala breaking it all down. And Mike, we've talked football for 3 months now. Let's talk basketball. The Rebels and first-year coach T.J. Otzelberger. Did I say that right?
Otzelberger. You got
Otzelberger.
It.
I'm getting there. It took me 3 years to get Bobby Houck's name right, but I managed to pull it off. They're ready to go. We both were at the Mountain West Media Day where we got to talk with coach and a few players. And I tell you, the one thing I love is his determination to push the ball, and you know, the best chance to score is when the other team isn't set. And for me, that's exciting. I think this is going to be an exciting brand of basketball. Is it going to be a winning brand of basketball? Probably not this year, but it's going to be exciting.
Yeah, that's what T.J. Otzelberger brings. He's got that new age offense. It's as modern as it comes. It's fast, you know. There in practice, he's got all his rules and his guideposts to the offense. You know, when they get a defensive rebound, the guard, you know, you've got two dribbles to get it across half court, or else that's not fast enough for him. After the rebound, you've got 3 seconds to get it into the scoring area, which is, you know, the 3-point line and, you know, where your offense would normally be set. So after the rebound, you get 3 seconds to get to the scoring area, 2 dribbles to get across half court. If you're not doing that, then you're not playing fast enough for him. So that's sort of the pace that UNLV is going to be playing at this year, which if they can keep up is going to be, you know, very, very fast. The other thing that they've been focusing on a lot is just more so than the offense in practice has been like defense. Like everybody's coming out talking about the defense first. When you try and ask them questions about the offense, they sort of pivot to, well, you know, we've got to play defense and we've got to defend. So they're saying all the right things like every other team at this time of year. So we'll get to see a little bit of that at the exhibition.
So let me ask you this. The Rebels are going to be running as their nickname says they will be. But what happens in the final 90 seconds of a game and they're up by 2? Are they going to race the ball up and try to get a shot in 3 or 4 seconds? Or are they going to be able to dip back into the half court and try to drain some clock and get that great premium shot?
Well, T.J. Otzelberger, he's talked about this a little bit, is that, you know, you get that first shot before the defense is set. When you get up there in 3, 4, 5 seconds, you know, fast break, transition, you get that open three-pointer. That's the shot that they want. The shot that they don't want is that shot, you know, between 10 and 30 seconds on the shot clock in that middle area. They want to work the ball. That's when they want to be passing, moving it back and forth, stretching the defense, creating mismatches. And then in that final, like, you know, 7 seconds of the shot clock is when you can create another high percentage shot. He's got this all broken down into time frames. You know, if you can't get that first shot in the transition, you want to hold the ball, work the entire possession, and then shoot it, you know, at the end of your, you know, 30-second allotment. So, yeah, I think that it's sort of baked into the offense that if you do want to hold it or if you do want to stretch out a possession, you can do that. It's just you don't want to dribble out the possession, you know?
Like sure.
You don't want 30 seconds of someone dribbling in place to run out the clock. They want 30 seconds of zipping the ball back and forth, ball reversals from one side to the other, make the defense move, set screens, make them switch. Like they want you to be active for those 30 seconds, but I think they will run out the clock and use up a possession if they have to.
Seems like a great strategy. All teams have good strategies, but you need the Jimmies and the Joes in place to make it work. How are the UNLV's Jimmies and Joes? Obviously, a major piece is redshirting, but other than that, how does the team look?
Yeah, David Jenkins is redshirting. He would be the top scorer on this team, but that'll be his role next year when he's eligible. They got a couple Jimmies, maybe a Joe or two.
Is Jimmy, like they got Joe better than Jimmy?
They've got Omori Hardy, Bryce Hamilton, Donnie Tillman. Those guys are like legitimate 4-star caliber prospects, you know, when they came out of high school. Those are guys with legitimate like talent. They could play at a lot of, you know, Division I schools. So, you know, they might even be able to play at Power 5 schools. I mean, Donnie Tillman played at a Power 5 school, was quite successful there in the Pac-12. So those are guys who are, you know, pretty talented. You can build around. And the rest of the team, you know, you've got to find, you know, roles, and that's up to the coaching staff. And how do we get the most out of these guys? How do we fit them into our system? A guy like Jonah Antonio, he's not going to get recruited by Duke. But if he comes out and, you know, hits, you know, 3 or 4 3-pointers a game at 40% and he stretches the floor for you and he competes on the defensive end and you can work around his weaknesses, that still can be a pretty good player for you. So, yeah, they're not like a top level. They're not ready to jump into the, you know, the ACC and compete with, like I said, Duke and North Carolina in terms of talent. But for the Mountain West, they're probably in the top 4 or 5 in terms of just rosters from top to bottom.
So you bring up an interesting name, Bryce Hamilton, a guy who last year I was begging to see more of. Obviously, he came in. He was, you know, probably the best recruit in the 17 class, right? Class of 17. And or was it class of 18?
He was the class of 2018.
18. So he was either way, he's probably his class's best recruit.
Mm-hmm.
Marvin Menzies' third class. And he kind of got stuck there, you know, all freshman. There was an adjustment period, but he kind of hit a rut and couldn't get out of it. And I wished he would have played more. But now I see the guy walking around and his body looks a little different. And I'm like, well, if he transformed his body where he looks a little more fit and slender, I wonder how the rest of his game is. Do you think he's going to play more, be more productive, be that four-star guy that he was brought in to be?
He's a good guy to bring up if you're trying to demonstrate the difference between Marvin Menzies and TJ Otzelberger, because Marvin Menzies, you know, probably wanted Bryce Hamilton a little bit bigger. He wants him to take more of a, you know, wants him to be that big, powerful guard, wants, you know, shooting mid-range jumpers, you know, posting up a little bit, you know, the things that Bryce Hamilton does, whereas TJ Otzelberger wants him lean and long and quick, so that he can run around and, you know, get open and shoot three-pointers and run the floor on the fast break. So it's the body type sort of speaks to that. And then there's the playing style. I do think Bryce Hamilton can be effective if he can knock down three-pointers. He's not a natural three-point shooter. You know, he's got a little hitch in the top of his shot. He's more of a mid-range shooter than he is a three-point guy. But he does have some things that no one else on the team, you know, kind of had. He can put the ball down confidently, drive to the basket. You can use guys like that. It's just, he's a mid-range shooter, and he's talked about it in the preseason. Like, TJ does not want him shooting that shot. Like, don't shoot the mid-range. And that was his bread and butter. Like, so it's hard for a player when you come in and you're like, this is what I've been good at. This is what got me a 4-star rating. This is what got me to the top 100. This is what got me recruited and got me a scholarship. And now my coach is saying, don't shoot this shot. Don't play that game. Play a three-point-based game. Play a layup-based game. So it's, can he go from shooting mid-range jumpers to shooting threes and layups? Like, on paper, it seems like an easy thing to do, but it's in reality, it's harder. So can he make that transition? If he does, he'll be a good player, maybe even a great player for UNLV.
Yeah, and it's I guess, you know, we were at Mountain West Media Day, and I kind of get the lay of the league. Utah State, preseason top 25 nationally, defending league champs. They're again, favored to win the league. San Diego State returned some players. They're going to be in the top tier. Reno, again, even though they have a coaching change, they bring in Steve Alford, who's had much success in the Mountain West when he's at New Mexico. So those are three teams that are going to be tough to beat for UNLV. They're ranked 7th in the preseason. I don't know how Matt Lowe. I think after those big three of Utah State, UNR, and San Diego State, they're right there. And if I look at the UNLV roster, and this is just me, 1 through 6 or 7, I think they're decent. But when a player goes down to injury or you get in foul trouble or you need to go to players 8 or 9 or even 10, I think that's where you get into some trouble. I think, you know, Nick Blair off the bench is going to be great. I really do. I think he's a good player. I love the way he played last year, even though he kind of faded a little bit towards the end of the season. I think him being your 7th or 8th guy is great, but I think after that, it's a little suspicious.
Yeah, you get to the well, it's, you could say that. I feel like even the best Mountain West teams, you're not having the kind of depth where you can field 2 teams. Like, look at UNR last year. You know, that's the best. They were ranked top 5 in some polls, you know, some preseason polls, the best Mountain West team ever. And they didn't play reserves. Like they had five guys that they played the entire game because they had no depth. So it's not.
And
like,
by the end of the year, though, yeah, they were done.
So it's like it's not a league where you can sort of count on having depth. If you do, it's a luxury, an extreme luxury. I feel like you can probably look at the bottom five or six players on every team's roster, and there are a ton of question marks. But yeah, UNLV, you've got guys like Marvin Coleman or Jay Green. One of those two guys is going to have to be the backup point guard and give you 15, 20 minutes on most nights. And those are two guys we've never seen play before. You know, we've seen them play a handful of minutes in their entire careers, and one of them is going to be your backup point guard. So, yeah, there's definitely question marks. I don't know about the debt. Like, that's a coaching thing to me. Like, don't you feel like you get your starting five, you get your sixth man, your seventh man, those are rotation guys. Where the coaching really factors in is, like, what can you get out of those next six guys? Like, can you carve out a role for them where they're only – you just ask them to do one or two things in their 4 minutes, and then you get them out of there.
And they're not going to hurt you along the way.
Yeah.
So Marvin's first year, we knew they were going to be terrible, and they were terrible, right?
Mm-hmm.
Day's first year, he had a lot of the players that were on Lon's teams. We thought they'd go to the tournament. They went to the tournament. TJ's first year, I think what's lost is last year UNLV won 11 league games and finished fourth in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They lose Triple T. It's basically their big loss from that team, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unless you argue, well, who's the guy that went to Oregon? Does he count?
Shakur Justin.
Does he count?
He didn't play last year, basically, you know, entire, you know, last 25 games he didn't play. So, I mean.
So this is essentially the same team that took fourth in the league last year with minus one guy.
Minus Joel and Tomboy.
Mm-hmm. Who was really good.
Yes.
And he went to Texas Tech.
Yep.
Is he there?
Yes.
Okay. So why can't they take fourth again?
You could.
Especially if you argue the coaching's better.
You could. It's a question of how much – it's, you know, the rest of the league you have to take into account. Some people are high on New Mexico. I was not high on them last year.
Tough to play at home.
Yeah, it's like they could be okay. Like, I definitely think, like, you hit it when you said, like, there's a top three, which is in that top tier. And then the rest is, like, that middle tier is sort of up for grabs. Could New Mexico blow everyone out and be better than UNLV by a wide margin? I guess. Could the opposite happen and UNLV ends up better than New Mexico? That could also happen. Like that.
Could UNLV be better than San Diego State?
It wouldn't shock me. I would pick San Diego State ahead of them to start the year. But 32 games is a long time. It wouldn't shock me. We don't know exactly how good of a coach TJ Otzelberger is. He could be a great coach. Then, you know, and he's just getting started, and this is the start of something great. I think, you know, sixth, seventh in the league preseason is fair to UNLV, but I do think there's an upside for them to outperform that. I don't think there's much downside. I don't think they're going to drop much lower than that.
But he came
that's the
in,
good thing.
TJ came in as a good X's and O's guy. More of an X's and O's guy.
TJ comes in as a good philosophy guy. Like the way that he approaches basketball and the way that he wants to play is the way that you should play to maximize, you know, every possession. Like if you were going to draw up the blueprint, like analytically, how do you want your team to play from scratch? Like what he says is the right answer pretty much every time.
Yeah.
So can he get his players to do it consistently, and can he recruit the players to do it? But I think that the point is like,
well, we could talk. We don't got enough time, even though we could talk forever about recruiting.
Yeah.
Because he's clearly recruiting guys who he thinks is going to fit into his system, and not necessarily going after the most marquee guys in town.
Yes.
Which is fine. Football. Fresno, they 6 days after beating Vandy in Nashville, they went to Fresno, hung tough for a half, give or take, and then the wheels fell off. UNLV now 2-4 on the season, correct?
2-5.
2-5. 2-5. So they could lose one more game and still be bowl eligible. San Diego State, who they beat last year, comes into town on Saturday.
It's not the backup against the wall game just yet, but there's no margin for error at this point. So I mean, if you're all off season and through the entire training camp and preseason and through the season, like all the Tony Sanchez and the players have been saying, like, we don't think about the coaches, you know, job security. We don't think about that. We don't think about bowl game. We one game at a time. You're at a point now where Like, you can't not think about it. Like, it is the main storyline now going forward, especially if you lose one more game. That is something that you have to face as a team. So it's like, how do you respond to that is going to be something I'll be watching going forward. Like, if once you pick up that sixth loss and you're pretty much out of it, or even that seventh loss, like
seventh loss.
But that seventh loss is a foregone conclusion. But once you get to six losses, does the team kind of pack it in? You know, do they say, oh, well, that's it. You know, where am I going next year? Do I have transfer eligibility? Can I grad transfer? Who's going to be the next coach? What kind of team? Like, do players start packing it in? Do the coaches start packing it in? Or how much longer do they keep fighting after they pick up that sixth win? Because it is still technically alive, so.
Does UNLV have any chance to go into the Cannon game needing a win to become bowl eligible? Meaning,
well,
they'd win three, they'd go 3-1 in their next four games.
I think they were in this exact same scenario, what was it, 2 years ago, where they were two and five, and they needed to win four of their last five. And they won three of the last four, and then didn't they go into Reno needing a win in that final game? And then they got stopped on fourth down, Lexington Thomas, twice in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And if they won that, they would have gotten to six wins. So we've seen them almost pull out a miracle when they needed four out of five. That's what they need now. So I wouldn't rule it completely out. This is the easiest half of the schedule. You should be able to compete in most of these games if you bring it every week.
Yeah, but I really think it starts Saturday against San Diego State, who's, 5-1. You can't go into that game and fall behind early, because then I think the wheels are going to fall off. You need to be in this game at halftime to have success. Kenyon Oblad's taken every snap the last three games. What's the update on Rodgers? Is this Oblad's team moving forward?
Rodgers still out. Oblad's going to start. Sanchez said Rodgers could play this week depending on how he feels. I don't expect that to happen. And if he doesn't play this week, I mean, you start to think about, you know, there's 4 weeks left. Does he even play at all again the rest of the year? Do you just stick with Oblad? There's a lot of loose ends to be tied up with the Armani Rodgers thing. But when you mentioned, you know, it's a game you got to keep it close for the first half at least. I got one stat that I can throw at you just to – this game should be competitive. San Diego State is a team that will let you hang around. Like, they sort of game plan to play the game close. They run it – their rush percentage, they run the ball 60% of the time. 60% of their plays are runs, which is top 20 in the country. They run it as much as anyone. And they only gain 3.5 yards per carry, which is not that good. So they're not a great running team. But they are committed to it, which means they will play a shortened game. They will chew up clock. They're not going to blow you out early, you know, with a bunch of long pass plays. They may take a shot or two, but if you survive that, they're just going to run the ball, take up time, and, you know, try and score a couple touchdowns and beat you that way. So you don't.
It's a dream.
For UNLV, if you can't stop the run, and you can't, I mean, if you can't stop the big passing plays. Like, this is the team that's built to keep you in the game. So if you bring it, if you come and play a good game, you should be able to stay with it. So to your point about you need to keep it close through the half, this is the week that it lines up for that to happen for you. If you come out and get blown out in the first half against this team, something is really, really wrong.
Yeah. Well, backs against the wall for the Rebels. The Fresno game, a lot didn't go right. Specifically, they played an awful second half. I mean, no other way to say it. It was just an awful half. You know, maybe a lot of that's attrition, playing two games in 6 days, both on the road against quality opponents. And now they're in a situation which we kind of thought they would be in. Still would have been better if they won that Arkansas State game.
Yeah. Yeah, this is that you really needed one more win along the way, whether it was Arkansas State or Wyoming. You really would rather be 3-4 right now. Your position would look much, much better than obviously 2-5. Just from if you're trying to plot out a path to six wins. Let me ask you, I guess before we go here, as someone who no one knows the local scene better than you. You follow Kenyon Oblad for years. What have you seen from him? You know, in his first three starts. You know, we've seen some good stuff. We've seen some interceptions. What have you seen from him? Is it what you expected? What do you think he could be? Like, what's your take on him?
So I'd say I'm encouraged. The one thing with Kenyon, and I've not only covered Kenyon in high school, but I knew him when he played youth football. And when he has a chance to pass, he's really good. when he could get in the pocket, let a route develop, he could really pick them apart. When pressure starts coming and he's got to move, with like with a lot of quarterbacks, that's when he gets a little shaky. And some of these passes that he's completed, like some of those touchdowns to Grimes, perfect situation where he's had time to pass. He's seen the one receiver he was supposed to go to. He didn't have to check down, which still a lot of young quarterbacks aren't into the progression yet, right? Mm-hmm. And he was able to complete the pass. And, you know, it's definitely interesting because he and Rodgers are two distinctly different quarterbacks. Oblad can't run. Rodgers can't throw. It's pretty much that simple. And one of those is going to be your quarterback moving forward, and one of them's not going to be here. And, you know, if Kenyon somehow leads them to a bowl game and Sanchez is back next year, which the odds are long, just, you know, looking at the schedule, then he would be your quarterback moving forward. He'd be taking the first snap in Allegiant Stadium.
That's sort of why I ask. I mean, even if they do, no matter how the season plays out, I got to figure that Oblad has a better chance to be here next year than Rodgers. So if you're encouraged, I guess that's a good thing for the program going forward. Depending on the deal
with Oblad, he's a smart kid. He's a local kid. He's well-liked in the Las Vegas community. He's the perfect guy to be the face of your team moving into the new stadium.
If he's good.
You know, but they could hire a guy who runs the wishbone option, and he can't do that, and he won't be here.
Or a guy who comes in and wants to bring along a grad transfer or someone to right away, or just a different offense that he doesn't think Kenyon Oblad fits into. Or yeah, all that stuff is in play. So, yeah, I'm just sort of wanted to get your take on what do you think of the quarterback situation as we sort of wrap up.
But I mean, I love the offense. I think they've got two good tailbacks. The line is great, and Kenyon can throw the ball around. I mean, the team is improved. There's no question about it. They've got more guys than they did 4 years ago. It just hasn't translated to wins yet. And the way the schedule gods worked out this year, this was the toughest schedule in Sanchez's 5 years. If he had this team in year one or year two or whatever, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. It would just be a down year.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like if they had scheduled another automatic win in non-conference, you'd be good with your position right now. You'd be happy about it. You probably would have wished to get another win, but you'd be okay, like I said, with 3-4. They didn't do that. They only scheduled one guaranteed win with against a Division II team. Arkansas State was sort of a coin flip, which they lost, and then you played the two Power 5 conference teams. So, yeah, if they could have gotten another guaranteed game in there, it would have been beneficial, but the schedule has not really worked out that way. They do have this is the easiest stretch, you know.
It's what they've been waiting for. So can they go 3-1 to set up the game with Reno?
Can Kenyon Oblad go 3-1 to set up that game?
There's your question. I tell you what, Kenyon went into Texas as a high school quarterback and beat a top 5 team in Texas.
So against San Diego State, what do you think?
What are they, a 12-point dog?
I haven't checked the line, but yeah, I think it's 12. I think about two touchdowns seems about right.
I mean, I do like the fact that San Diego State is deliberate like UNLV is deliberate. Maybe it could come down to UNLV being in the game in the fourth quarter like they were last year, and they got those two big runs from Lex.
Yeah, if you're a UNLV fan, you hope for a close game. Hope Javon White makes a play late or something, you know, the way that they wrapped up the Reno game last year. So that's it. We're done. Rebel Room.
Yep.
Rebel
Room. See you next week.